9. Sputnik Moment. The United States and China entered the 21st century as friends. 2 decades later, they were bitter rivals. The story of the rivalry that emerged is central to the geopolitical competition unfolding in AI. There are many nations pursuing AI. Over 50 countries have or are developing national AI plans or strategies, but the U.S.-China relationship will have profound consequences for the future of global AI research, talent flows, supply chains, and cooperation. The American and Chinese AI ecosystems are deeply intertwined, but actions by Beijing and Washington are starting to pull them apart. The contemporary U.S.-China relationship began with President Nixon's historic visit in 1972, but the real turning point came in 1989. The U.S.-China Cold War relationship was born of real politic, a shrewd triangulation on both sides of the balance of power between the U.S., the USSR, and China. In 1989, the dynamic changed. Protest movements throughout the communist world upended the existing order, but as the Eastern Bloc began to crumble in Europe, Chinese leaders took a different tack. On June 4, 1989, the Chinese military entered Tiananmen Square in Beijing, where hundreds of thousands of students had gathered in protest, calling for political reform. The military massacred the protesters, killing hundreds, if not thousands. Whereas communist regimes in Europe had declined to fire on their people and fallen to political revolution, the Chinese Communist Party had opted for force. The United States had a choice to make. There was little stomach in Washington for a strategy of containing China. U.S. policymakers saw the collapse of communism in Europe as the triumph of the West and the end of history. President George H.W. Bush was a sober pragmatist who had quipped he wouldn't dance on the Berlin Wall to celebrate the end of communism, and likewise cautioned against an overly emotional reaction to Tiananmen. As the need to triangulate the global balance of power against the Soviet Union faded, Bush sought to engage China, in part citing the powerful momentum of history toward freedom. Bush argued, "As people have commercial incentives, whether it's in China or other totalitarian systems, the move to democracy becomes inexorable." Washington adopted a new strategy, shaping China's inevitable rise. China was emerging as a global power, a reality that U.S. policymakers had to confront. By 1992, China's annual GDP growth was 14%, and it never dipped below 7% in the 1990s. During the Clinton administration, engagement became the new lodestar of U.S. foreign policy to China, with the aim of influencing China's behavior. Far from a Pollyannish view of Chinese leaders, engagement was a calculated policy stemming from the belief that growing interdependence would have a liberalizing effect in China, and that enmeshing China in international institutions would lead China to be a responsible stakeholder in the international system. Clinton argued, "The more China liberalizes its economy, the more fully it will liberate the potential of its people, and the genie of freedom will not go back into the bottle." Such policies may seem naive in retrospect, but history supported the dictator's dilemma that autocratic states had a choice between shutting out information technology and economic growth, or embracing it and bringing along the free flow of information and ideas. U.S. policymakers believed that economic freedoms would, over time, give rise to a greater desire among citizens for more political freedoms as well. U.S. leaders hardly expected China to turn into a democracy overnight, but they believed that the dictator's dilemma would force Chinese leaders to make a choice between adopting political reforms or foregoing the benefits of economic growth. Clinton argued, "Without the full freedom to think, question, to create, China will be at a distinct disadvantage, competing with fully open societies in the information age, where the greatest source of national wealth is what resides in the human mind." The domestic pressures internal to China that engagement was intended to bring were real. What U.S. policymakers underestimated was the ability of Chinese leaders to break the dictator's dilemma and use information technology to repress Chinese citizens, even while permitting economic freedoms. The Tiananmen massacre was a sign of how far Chinese Communist Party leaders were willing to go to maintain their grip on power, and their ruthlessness would not wane in the decades after. While U.S. defense analysts warily watched China's rise and military modernization in the early 2000s, engagement remained the focus of the George W. Bush and Barack Obama administrations' approaches to China. By 2007, U.S. defense analysts were sounding the alarm that Chinese military investments in anti-access capabilities, such as missiles, advanced air defense systems, and anti-satellite weapons, were hindering America's ability to project power into the Western Pacific region and protect America's friends and allies. Yet when I worked in the Pentagon during the Bush and Obama administrations, there was a healthy debate among U.S. officials about China's rise and the extent to which China was a strategic competitor. As late as 2010, Defense Department official policy documents left open the door for a productive relationship, stating, "The United States welcomes a strong, prosperous, and successful China that plays a greater global role." A series of successive Chinese actions in the 2010s shattered that illusion. While Chinese leaders enthusiastically pursued economic growth, they carefully managed U.S. economic and social ties, wary of the risks of destabilizing China. The Chinese Communist Party built a series of buffers against unwanted liberalizing forces, including a great firewall to control the flow of information into China, increased domestic surveillance, censorship, and propaganda, and a brutal crackdown on human rights activists and dissidents. Economic interdependence was carefully managed as well. Chinese firms were protected from international competition through state subsidies and by limiting market access for foreign firms inside China. China used foreign economic ties to engage in a systematic campaign of intellectual property theft and economic espionage. America's strategy of engagement assumed economic liberalization would pave the way for political liberalization. But political reform had not occurred, and even economic openness was a one-way street. Internationally, China's peaceful rise, as its leaders had claimed, was turning out to be anything but. In the 2010s, China began an aggressive campaign to militarize the South China Sea, threatening the Philippines, Taiwan, Vietnam, Malaysia, and Indonesia, and destabilizing the region. Tensions rose across the Taiwan Straits as U.S. leaders feared China was building a military option to absorb democratic Taiwan. Washington had, for a while, been patient with various tensions in the relationship, confident that time was on their side. But by the time President Trump came to office, the stage was set for a reckoning with China. The emerging geopolitical rivalry between the United States and China coincided with the AI revolution, such that Chinese progress in AI was viewed suspiciously in Washington and vice versa. At the tail end of the Obama administration, the White House released a series of policy documents outlining the importance of AI. While falling short of a coherent national strategy for AI, the three White House documents released in late 2016 nevertheless highlighted AI as a critical area for the economy and laid out government R&D priorities. China took notice, and in July 2017 released its own signature AI strategy, the New Generation Artificial Intelligence Development Plan. The document called for China to be the world's primary AI innovation center by 2030, and sent shockwaves through the U.S. national security establishment. In late 2017, a few months after China's plan was released, I hosted former Google CEO Eric Schmidt at a major AI conference in Washington, D.C., run by the Center for a New American Security, where I work. Schmidt has often served as a bridge between the tech and national security worlds and chaired the Defense Innovation Board and the National Security Commission on AI. Schmidt said he took China's goal of leading the world in AI by 2030 seriously. "Trust me, these Chinese people are good," he said. "You're crazy to treat them as somehow second-class citizens." Schmidt called for a new Sputnik moment, hearkening back to the catalyzing event that the Soviet launch of the first satellite, Sputnik, had on the United States. Fears of Soviet technological dominance propelled the United States to create NASA and the Advanced Research Projects Agency, the precursor to DARPA, launch the space race, and sparked a wave of federal R&D spending that paid dividends for decades. "This is that moment," Schmidt said. "This is the moment where the government, collectively with private industry, needs to say these technologies are important." Schmidt's call for a Sputnik moment evokes a comparison to the space race, when the United States and Soviet Union raced to achieve firsts in spaceflight. It's an imperfect analogy for the current moment with AI. The space race was dominated by two nations and driven by government spending, while AI technology is diffuse and driven by the private sector. But in other ways, the comparison is useful. The space race was a technology competition, not an arms race in building weapons. The U.S.-led agency, NASA, was a civilian organization, but maintaining a technological advantage was seen as critical for national security. Advancements in space technology had spin-off applications for both military and civilian applications, such as improved missiles and surveillance satellites, but also communications, weather, and GPS satellites. While the moon was a clear physical destination, a visible landmark in the sky for all to see, the space race had no true destination. It was a competition to stay ahead in an emerging technology with implications for economic and military power. The unfolding geopolitical competition in AI is similar. Despite loose talk by both defense leaders and AI researchers about an AI arms race, AI is not a weapon. It is a general-purpose technology, much like electricity. There will no doubt be military applications of AI, but the bigger national advantage is likely to be found in adopting AI across society overall by increasing efficiencies, healthcare outcomes, economic growth, and other indicators of national well-being. Additionally, by increasing productivity, technological advancements have a compounding effect on economic growth and, by extension, national power. Over the long term, technological progress is the main driver of economic growth. AI can have a significant direct impact on economic productivity by offloading routine physical and cognitive tasks to machines, freeing up humans for more complex tasks. A detailed analysis by the McKinsey Global Institute in 2017 found that roughly half of all job-related tasks in the U.S. economy could be automated using existing technology. Only a small number, less than 5% of jobs, could be entirely replaced by automation, but 6 in 10 jobs could be significantly transformed, with automation replacing 30% or more of tasks that workers perform in those jobs. Nations that successfully seize these opportunities and manage the disruption they may bring could have tremendous long-term advantages. Despite Schmidt's call for a Sputnik moment, the United States has struggled to develop a coherent national strategy for AI. The Trump administration released a number of high-level AI documents in 2019, including an executive order on AI leadership and an updated R&D plan, but the plans didn't move the ball forward significantly from the Obama administration's 2016 documents. The most comprehensive plan had come from the National Security Commission on AI, a Blue Ribbon panel chaired by Eric Schmidt and Bob Work, which released a 700-plus page report in early 2021. Disclosure: I served as a consultant to the commission. Yet the commission was only a temporary, congressionally appointed panel without any authority for actually making and implementing decisions. They could only advise. The government still needed to act. China, on the other hand, isn't cutting any corners when it comes to AI competition. Following the 2017 National AI Plan, Chinese leaders issued a series of implementation plans to achieve China's goal of being the global AI leader by 2030. These include the 3-year action plan to promote the development of new generation AI industry and the 13th 5-year science and technology military civil fusion special projects plan, both released in 2017. Chinese leaders have emphasized AI as central to national success. Chinese General Secretary Xi Jinping said in a 2018 Politburo session, "Accelerating the development of a new generation of AI is an important strategic handhold for China to gain the initiative in global science and technology competition, and it is an important strategic resource driving our country's leapfrog development in science and technology." Reflecting on China's emphasis on AI, Schmidt said, "There's no question that there was a Sputnik moment, and it was in China. And the Sputnik moment was when AlphaGo beat the Chinese champion, and Chinese care a great deal about the game of Go. Kujie, who at the time was the world's number one Go player, lost to DeepMind's AlphaGo in 2017. Schmidt added, "Not only was it notable, but they also censored the television feed because they didn't want people to see them lose." Go is an ancient strategy game first invented in China over 2,000 years ago, and to have the top Chinese champion dethroned by an AI program built by a Western company was a galvanizing moment. Schmidt is hardly a China hawk. "I am not a person who believes that we are adversaries with China. I believe that we are in competition with China," he said. "We are not in a shooting war. We disagree on some things, but it's important that we retain the ability to collaborate with China." Schmidt explained, "China and the United States have many common goals," citing AI safety and climate change. "Both countries have benefited from trade between the two countries for a long time." 3 decades of engagement has meant that the American and Chinese AI ecosystems are strongly connected, yet China's militarization of the South China Sea, bullying of its neighbors, and predatory economics led the U.S. government to declare China a strategic competitor in 2018. China's mass detention of over 1 million Uyghurs in Xinjiang, eroding Hong Kong's freedoms and unwillingness to change its illiberal economic practices, further hardened views in Washington. The novel coronavirus pandemic came at a moment when the U.S.-China relationship was at a turning point. Washington's foreign policy community had discarded the prior decades-long strategy of engagement, but was still in search of what might come next. The pandemic might have been an opportunity for the two countries to come together against a common enemy. After all, a virus kills both Americans and Chinese alike. But the political reaction to the pandemic, which had as much to do with domestic politics in both nations as geopolitical competition, cemented their rivalry. Concerns about economic competition took on a new urgency in 2020. The pandemic slammed the brakes on the global economy, leading to a sharp drop in economic activity in mid-2020. The economic fallout imperiled President Trump's re-election, but was an even bigger risk for China's leaders. While there was no risk of the Chinese Communist Party being voted out at the polls, authoritarian regimes lacked the pressure release valve for angry citizens to vote for change, making them more brittle than democracies. If Chinese citizens lost faith in the system and demanded change, the corrective mechanisms could be harsh and brutal. Whereas democratic politicians who lose the public's confidence might transition to a plush lobbying gig, dictators who fall from power may face the firing squad. The blood-soaked bargain the Chinese Communist Party offered Chinese citizens in the aftermath of Tiananmen was political stability and economic growth in exchange for their freedom and civil liberties. In the decades since, the CCP has staked its domestic credibility on continued economic growth. And China has seen unparalleled growth, lifting hundreds of millions out of poverty. Yet the government's bungling of the outbreak in Wuhan led some Chinese citizens to wonder if the incident would prove to be China's Chernobyl, akin to the 1986 nuclear disaster that exposed the hollowness of the Soviet system. For CCP leaders, the lack of faith in the government was a potential contagion even worse than the virus itself, and the government launched a crackdown on information mirroring the physical lockdown to contain the coronavirus. Chinese propaganda organs went into overdrive, trumpeting the benefits of China's model of pandemic response. While the pandemic posed a risk domestically, it was an opportunity internationally for China to step into a global leadership role. CCP leaders watched the American government's incompetent response and seized the moment for a global soft power push, sending masks and personal protective equipment to other nations and stepping up their propaganda campaign. Chinese officials triumphantly declared in English-speaking outlets that the West is falling apart, and it was time for American and European leaders to draw closer to China and drop the hubris. Emboldened by the crisis, Chinese diplomats stepped up their coercive diplomacy to pressure countries to play by China's rules. Chinese medical supplies were frequently accompanied by requests that receiving governments praise China. Chinese officials convinced European Union lawmakers to tone down a report whose early drafts criticized China's global disinformation campaign. When Australia called for an independent inquiry into the origins of the virus, China responded by restricting imports of Australian products into China. When Venezuelan officials referred to the Chinese coronavirus, the Chinese embassy launched an angry Twitter thread, concluding with the demand that China's critics put on a mask and shut up. U.S.-China relations, already strained, deteriorated even further. Chinese officials didn't hesitate to flex their leverage over the United States due to China's manufacture of life-saving drugs. Chinese state-run media threatened to cut off drug exports and plunge the United States into the mighty sea of coronavirus. China's wolf warrior diplomats, named after a popular Chinese action movie series, went even further, pushing conspiracy theories to deflect blame from China's mishandling of the outbreak. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian suggested that the U.S. Army might have started the outbreak in Wuhan. U.S. policymakers were enraged, and China's actions accelerated pressures in Washington toward decoupling with China. For years, Chinese leaders had heeded the words of former Chinese leader Deng Xiaoping to hide your strength and bide your time. It would appear that the time is now. As the world reeled from the novel coronavirus, China moved beyond threats to action. In May 2020, Chinese troops entered Indian territory in the Himalayas, sparking a series of skirmishes that killed troops on both sides. In June, China passed a new national security law in Hong Kong, launching a sweeping crackdown to imprison journalists and activists and dismantle Hong Kong's freedoms. In August, Chinese military aircraft escalated brief incursions across the midline of the Taiwan Strait, a not-so-veiled threat of force. Fearing that Chinese leaders would feel emboldened by perceived American military weakness, the United States sent two aircraft carriers to the region to engage in exercises with India, Japan, and Australia. In response to increased Chinese assertiveness, nations are taking steps to restructure global supply chains for critical technologies. India, Japan, and Australia launched a trilateral supply chain resilience initiative to reduce their dependence on China. As part of its economic stimulus, the Japanese government allocated $2.2 billion to incentivize companies to move production out of China. The French government began working with French pharmaceutical companies to reshore production. And the United States, Congress, and White House began taking steps to reduce American dependency on China for pharmaceutical ingredients. U.S. actions are also beginning to shift supply chains for semiconductors. Congress approved injecting tens of billions of dollars into the U.S. semiconductor industry, including government subsidies for building new domestic chip fabrication plants, or fabs, giving the United States more security in its semiconductor supplies. In a significant escalation of the tech competition, the Commerce Department tightened export controls on transferring advanced semiconductors and chip manufacturing equipment to China. Nations are drawing closer together to counter Chinese economic coercion and military aggression. In September 2021, Australia, the United Kingdom, and the United States announced the trilateral AUKUS partnership to deepen military cooperation. Without stating it explicitly, both arrangements were aimed at countering China. Additional Chinese military aggression has further sharpened geopolitical lines. In August 2022, the G7 grouping of Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, the United States, and the European Union criticized what it termed China's aggressive and escalatory military exercises around Taiwan following U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to the island. Post-pandemic, the old geopolitical order is up for grabs. China's now Vice Premier Liu He wrote in 2013, "After a big crisis, what is redistributed is not merely wealth within a country, but the relative power of all nations. Huge advantages will accrue to whichever nations come out of the crisis running. Emerging technologies like AI will be even more critical to help drive technological dominance, economic growth, and national power. China remains a technology leader and a global AI powerhouse. How China adopts AI will have major consequences for the shifting global order."